This episode was recorded in July 2020. If you enjoy this podcast, then subscribe to catch all future episodes.
How are you? Where are you? Tell everybody where you are, first of all.
Rob, I'm just going to set that. There you go. I'm in Australia. I'm in a place called Newcastle, which is about 2 hours north of Sydney. It's a very blue-collar, working-class area. Coal is the biggest exporter here, so you can imagine coming from the Newcastle, Blythe area in Whitley Bay. It's the coal mining background. This just felt like home, mate. But it's winter over here, can you believe, Rob? So normally I'd be saying it is bright and sunshine. We've got torrential rain, and it's been horrendous. So you're not missing much, mate.
I tell you what, Newcastle, obviously, is part of your soul, isn't it? How did you end up in Newcastle in the first place? As in Newcastle, Australia?
It was, the moment came. I'd been over here, and just when I was at Hull with Phil Brown, we had a fallout, me and the manager, Phil Brown, at the time. And I just decided to go on loan. And it was Dwight York said, come to Australia, check out Sydney FC. He'd already been here as the marquee player and had gone back. So I came over here with Janino, the Borough player, for about 10-month period. And fell in love with Australia and tried everything in my power to get back over here because I could see the league was developing. So I'd had another spell at Carlisle United and just thought, you know, I'm coming at the end of my career. The injuries are taking their toll. The knees were feeling the winters and having to warm up every morning on the bike. So I noticed when I was in Australia, I didn't have to do that, Rob. The heat had actually played a massive benefit on the body. And, you know, I got another... What I get, the move came about because the Sydney FC manager at the time was a guy called Branko Cellina. He got the Newcastle Jets job and he decided to, you know, give us another crack in the A-League for a longer period of time instead of just coming as a guest player. And that's how it materialised.
I mean, we'll talk a little bit about you had some incredibly bad luck with injuries, but I guess, you know, things even themselves out. Do you class it as an incredible stroke of luck that you ended up in Australia? Because you made your home there now and it's clearly doing you good. You're doing them good.
Rob, I'm a big believer in fate. There's a few things. You ride the highs of football, you ride the lows, not just in football, but in life, mate, in business. And you're always going to be up and down. And, you know, I had a great experience. I look back and people always say, if you hadn't had that injury at Leeds against Besiktas, would you have regretted, you know, what would you have turned back time? And, you know, I wouldn't have met my wife at that time. I met Kate when I was at a bad point in my life. I've got two beautiful kids now. And the surgeon said that I would never play again. And I love a challenge. And, you know, Dave Hancock, the physio, got me through and said, don't sign that bit of paper, mate. You might not play at the highest level ever again, but if you love the game and you want to play it professionally, you know, it's going to be a long, hard slog. And it was. It was 14 to 15 months with one injury. And, you know, like I say, I wouldn't be here with twin boy and girl, with a wife. And, all right, I went down the divisions, but I was still having the love of the game. And Australia, I played till I was 35, Rob. So when you're told at 21 you'll never play football ever again, I just feel blessed, mate. And it was hard yakka, but you've got to make the most of crap situations. It doesn't matter what kind of walk of life you're in.
Well, and what do they make of you as a Pom? We always hear, you know, they're like, oh, the Poms, blah, blah, blah. But they've taken you to their heart, haven't they?
They have, mate. I got called a stinky, smelly Pom when I first got here. They say that we don't have baths, and they say, you know, they say, can you get yourself in a tub? And I was like, what are you on about? So what it is, I mean, you've talked about, I think the reason you make the most of situations, like I came to Australia, if I'd have come here with the mindset, Rob, of, oh, I'm coming here to finish my career off, it's going to be a bit of a, you know, a party, let's enjoy Sydney and Newcastle for what it is and get the hell out of here. We didn't. We came in and we embraced it because what I really loved about the Australians, and I was at Leeds United, we had seven of them there. There was Harry Kewell, Mark Viduka, Jacob Burns, Danny Milosevic, Shane Carnell, Sheriff McMaster, who got there, Paul Ocon. What they did, it was work hard, play hard. They embraced it. It was the same mentality. They love a sledge. They love a bit of banter, as I call it. They call it sledging. And that's what I like, and I embraced it and I took that on board. So if you can't, you know, they'd give it out, but I tell you what, I was giving it back to them. And we just embraced the region because, like I say, the similarities of where I'm from, Newcastle, Whitley Bay, Tynemouth area, where you go down to Tynemouth and it meets South Shields. We've got a very similar harbour here in Newcastle. It opens up into the sea. They've got a fishing, a little like a fishing village up the thing. They've got the coal mining background, and yeah, it's a blue collar working class area. And if you embrace it and you meet the people, it's been huge, mate. Paid massive dividends. Plus, I was playing decent football as well for a couple of years, so that does help, Rob.
The great thing about your career is you finished football, you settled into Australia. I mean, you're very involved in the media. Tell us what you're doing with that.
Yeah, so a couple of things. When I retired from football, I went straight into the coaching because it's all I've known for 20-odd years of my life, playing football at a professional level. And I went into coaching, so I started doing the Newcastle Jets youth team for 2 years, really embraced it, loved it, passing on knowledge and helping the kids develop. And we had good success, became the assistant manager. But then what happened, the owner had stopped paying the players and the staff wages. We'd covered that up a few times. And it just got beyond a point where I thought, you know what it is? He'd sacked 5 staff members. He'd sacked 5 players for some unbeknown reason. And he kept myself on. Now, if I hadn't, you know, I could have stayed there and kept a job at the end of the day, Rob. But, you know, when you've lost 5 of your mates and you've seen things being done behind the scene, I just said enough's enough. So I resigned. I fell out of love of the game and took up a role with the media talking about the Premier League and Champions League because the people over here love Liverpool. In Chelsea, in Manchester United, and the love of Liverpool becomes from Craig Johnson, who was one of the first Aussies, and he won the FA Cup with Liverpool.
I've had some good nights out with Craig Johnson, let me tell you.
Mate, what a guy. I know he's been in America and all that, but he's from Newcastle originally, and his story is brilliant. That's what I love. And, you know, it was great to catch up with him, like you say, and he tells a good story as well, mate. But it was so I've got into the media. I've absolutely loved it. I can talk underwater. Love talking about the game. And during that period, I've just gone off and finished all the coaching badges to get to the pro diploma because I know where I wanted to go and what I want to do. And, you know, the media pays the bills. I coach for a local team in the MPL. So outside of the A-League over here, we have different states that have different leagues in. They're trying to develop a second division over here at the moment for the National League, but obviously with COVID, it hasn't helped. So I'm coaching 3 nights a week, game at the weekend with an amateur team, and I absolutely love it, Rob. And I'm just waiting for the right opportunity to get back into the coaching.
It's got the greatest name in the world. Tell us about the Lambton Jaffers.
Yes, the Lambton Jaffers. Now, they're a local team in Newcastle. It was funny, you know, because back home in England, a Jaffa, I don't know if, you know, a Jaffa over here is a sweet. Whereas I know that a Jaffa in England, I used to get called a Jaffa at Leeds by the boys because they say you've got no spunk. So when I told the boys what it meant over here, I said, you do know that you lads are meant, no, none of you have got any spunk. And they're like, what do you mean? I was like, listen, long story short. So it's actually a famous sweet over here, a Jaffa. So you ever got to try a chance to try one, look one up, mate, and see what you think.
Well, tell me about your... I want to talk about the A-League and Robbie Fowler, and I know he's done really well. But just tell me about your own. Is that what you really want to do? Do you want to go into coaching? And would it be in Australia, or eventually would you go back to England, or would you go abroad somewhere else? And are we talking coaching, talking managing?
Talking managing. I love, you know, I've done the sports and leadership in the A-license pro diploma, gone through all the badges, just done a leadership in business as well, in management course, which was invaluable, telling you how to handle people, how to deal with staff. So I know where I want to go. And, you know, when I'm doing keynote speaking and also doing Q&As as the footballers do, so you've got to have that confidence and be able to, you know, get people engaged and get your message across. So having a taste of that and enjoying doing what I do, you know, you've got to get yourself fully involved with coaching. I know that in management, the media, I love it, but it's just that there's something inside, there's a burning desire up to get back to doing that kind of thing. Wherever that might be, I don't know, but I flew back last year to have a chat with Carlisle United, got interviewed for that gig, and, you know, it was good to go and present and actually, you know, go and show yourself what you can do. Still got a good relationship with the fans over there in the board, so that was a good experience, Rob. So wherever it may be, Asia's a big market over here. Outside of the A-League, there's a lot more opportunities in Asia with the J. You know, you've got the J-League, you've got the Malaysian League, you've got China, the Chinese League, which is obviously up there where the big boys sit. So wherever it may be, Rob, I don't know, but I'm in Asia at this moment in time. I'm open to opportunities, but I'm not just going to jump at the first thing. There's things I've turned down, mate. You've got to make sure the club you're going to is right, because there was something came up in Thailand. And I did my due diligence and had a look around and checked it out. And I thought, you couldn't be in that job very long because of the past history tells you that. And one of my mates took the job instead and he lasted 5 weeks. So I knew I'd done a good thing.
There's plenty of jobs like that, unfortunately. I think it's ironic, isn't it? I mean, I did a lot of chatting with Robbie Fowler. We did a lot of interviews. And he was frustrated. That's the word. He was incredibly frustrated that nobody in England would hardly give him a chance. And it's bizarre. He's had to go virtually the whole way around the world to get his chance. And by the way, he earns it and he deserves his chance, Robbie Fowler. But I'm delighted to say that Brisbane Roar with Tony Grant, they're doing well, aren't they?
Yeah, well, like you say, I couldn't believe Robbie wasn't given an opportunity back in the UK going through the badges.
I think a lot of people felt the same way, I think.
Yeah, and you see some people that are getting gigs and it's the merry-go-round. You think, well, you know, it's time for a bit of fresh blood, because what the courses have developed, they've gone on to a new level. I think the influence of European managers, like your Pep Guardiola's, your Klopp's, given the English managers a wake-up call to say, you know, you've still got to do things and change things up, which is good. And, you know, a lot of the lads have embraced it and taken that on board. And if you don't, you're going to fall behind. So that's good they've done that. And Robbie, to come half around the world again, he came here as a player and made a really good end to his career. The fans absolutely loved him. Doesn't matter what he did as a player, because he played for Liverpool and he was God. So they were gonna love him anyway. But mate, you come back to the A-League, and if you don't have a really good start, you can really struggle over here, because there's 10 teams. So he put himself out there and said, I'm going to have a crack here. And Brisbane Roar were a basket case when he took over, because it had a lot of success beforehand under a guy called Ange Postecoglou, who's probably, I would say, the best manager to come out of Australian football. Every club done over here, he's had success, massive success with the national team, and just won the J-League with Yokohama. And the last person to do that in the first season was Arsene Wenger. So there's one for you. So he's done an incredible, mate. So Robbie's come over and he's got Brisbane Roar ticking again. He's got them bouncing. Him and Granty have done great. And I've spoke to a few of the players that said it was just a breath of fresh air. He didn't come in and try and brainwash them with new tactics and styles. He just got everybody enjoying and got the dressing room feel again. And like Robbie said, he was feeding them just small bits of information and he didn't want to overload them. So fair play to him for him for doing that. Sadly, COVID hit. He's gone back to the UK. And the A-League's going to start again. But what's happened over here, Rob, we've lost, obviously, Robbie Fowler's gone back with Granty at this moment in time. Carl Robinson, who played over at Sunderland with myself, went over to Toronto in the MLS. He's a coach of the Newcastle Jets now. He's back in the UK, back in Canada, trying to get here. One of the Victory coaches has left to go back to Europe as well. So there's a lot of clubs have really had to make sacrifices because the managers have been from overseas. So it's going to start again without the managers. And I'm hoping that Robbie will be back here next season, unless he gets another opportunity now in England, because he's proved himself here.
We're talking management. You had some amazing managers you played under. Is the one you go, right, he's the one, or do you take bits from all of them? And if so, what bits?
Do you know what it is, Rob? That was a big thing on the course. It was actually saying on the course I was doing about leadership and management, they said, go back and think of your previous bosses. Now, I've had a lot of clubs, mate, so my list was like bloody that long of the bosses that I've had. You take the pros and the cons from each of them, you know. So it was fascinating to see what not to do, because I look at the likes of Phil Brown when I was at Hull City with Phil, and you know, I had a big fallout with Phil. But when you look back and see what he did with the players, and when we played Manchester City and he left them out at half time in front of the fans and, you know, humiliate them like school kids, you can't do things like that. And I think Phil regrets that massively as well, probably his biggest mistake. And I look at other managers like Gary Johnson when I was at Bristol City. If you don't get that dressing room feel, and you alienate people and try to make people feel, you know, the other players see that and they're going, hang on, why are you treating him like that? It doesn't sit well. So the big thing for me that I was looking at was your Bobby Robson's, how he made everybody feel welcome. Everybody was like, he was like a father figure or a granddad that I'd never had. You know, he had the open relationship. He was honest. If you weren't involved in the game and you weren't involved in the bench, he would say, come into my office, we'll have a chat. and I'll tell you why and where you've got what you've got to do for next week. The honesty was incredible, and I think he proved that with the documentary we saw him do. If you've seen that one, More Than a Manager, that just typifies him. He embraced the media. You get everybody on side. It's not just about being a dictator. You've got to do the whole. Everybody in that football club has a part to play. And that's what it's about. If you want to lead, you've got a mentor. And they're the things that I take out of my ex-managers. Sam Allardyce is another one. When I went to Bolton Wanderers, I'd gone from playing for Leeds. We had massive success. But when I look back, we had a very, very good team. We had a very, very fit team, and we had quality players. But I look back, we didn't have any much sports science. We didn't have the analysis that went on, the pros on stats. My first year at Bolton Wanderers, man, I've got protein shakes, I've got these tablets that I've got to take, we're doing video analysis with Prozone. Sam was ahead of his time, absolutely ahead of his time, and I'm gutted I didn't have longer there with him at Bolton Wanderers because of the stuff that I was seeing, and I'm thinking I've seen everything because we're playing Champions League football with Leeds, and I hadn't. So again, you've got to keep ahead of the game, and you've always got to educate yourself to be, you know, you can't just say, oh, I've had a good season this year. If you go the same, people are going to overtake you. And that's what I like about Sam. He was always willing to step up and change. And people always, as a lot of people give him credit, a lot of people said he was a one-dimensional, you know, long ball. We worked on that strategy. There was method behind the madness, and that's what people don't understand, how tough it is to play a certain way. It doesn't just happen. You've got to do it, and he was methodical at what he did. So there's a lot of stuff I take out of managers that I have worked under in the past. And Peter Reid, another one, really, he would smash you, mate. He would tell you how it was. He was a hard taxman. Whether you can get away with that these days, I don't think you can. But what you can get away with, what he had, was the togetherness. He was all about camaraderie. Keeping the lads together for a weekend or for a few nights for the new lads, just to get yourself involved in the club. So there's bits I've taken from everybody, mate, and I've done a tick list and a bad list.
It's been fascinating to do these interviews, to be fair, Mick, because I spoke to Sean Derry, who cut his teeth at Notts, great career, Notts County, managed at Cambridge, went to Oxford under Carl Robinson as assistant. Yeah. Now he's coaching the academy at Crystal Palace, but he said it's his way, because he wants to be a top manager as well. But I was saying to him, how have they changed? How have the young players changed? And I wonder how you on your management course, and they say, okay, here's a case study. You go to the Peacock pub with all the Leeds lads, you get absolutely smashed. How do you deal with that, manager? How do you deal with that?
Yeah, well, there you go. They don't teach you that, do they? You know what the best one was, though, mate? I'll tell you how you deal with it. I went to, have you heard of Tall Trees?
Yes, of course. Legendary.
I went to Tall Trees with Darren Holloway when we were at Sunderland together playing. You know, we'd gone down there for a night. We missed our bus back, so we got stranded there. So we thought we'll stay at the hotel. Anyway, lo and behold, there was no rooms in the hotel. So I'll never forget, me and Daz are stuck there. And I remember saying to Daz, what do we do, mate? You know, I'm 18, he's 19. I said, we've got training tomorrow. You know, what do we do? How the hell are we going to get back? And I'm talking 3 a.m. here, by the way. So 2 a.m. Daz went, well, Reedy just lives over the back wall there. And I said, what do you mean? He said, the gaffer lives in that place. There must have been, like, it was an estate off the back of Tall Trees, and the gaffer had a cottage in there. So Daz said, we're going to have to stay there for the night. I said, you've got to be kidding us, mate. So anyway, lo and behold, we jumped the wall, stood outside Reedy's front door. Daz knocks on the door, so I dive in a bush. And Daz is there, and you hear Reedy comes down, and we go, what the fucking hell's going on here? What are you doing? He went, well, Bridges in the bush here, gaffer. He said, you two. I'm thinking we're getting sacked in the morning. So anyway, Daz has got the bedroom upstairs, spare bedroom. I've got he put me on the couch. He said, you're lying there tonight. You're a disgrace. He said, we'll have a chat tomorrow. Mate, I have never had the longest journey in the back of a car. Really was driving the training ground. Not a word was spoken. I'm thinking we're getting sacked here. We are getting sacked. So anyway, gets into the dressing room. And obviously he's text Bobby Saxon and all the boys, the first team lads, to say, I'm going to bring these two in a little bit later. I've got to annihilate them and tell them they're getting sacked or fined and all this. So we walked in, and the lads, Niall Quinn and them, are going, oh, disgrace, what have you done? Knocking the gaffer up, are you kidding? And the gaffer said, it was brilliant how he handled it. He said, what do you think I should do with these lads then, eh? With these two nuggets here? And he said, do I sack them? Do I fine them? And the lads, oh, you've got to fine them. He said, you know what it is? Nah. He said, they'll do me. I'm giving them a new 2-year deal. They're the type of players that I need. Oh, that's how you handle them situations.
That is brilliant. And that is classic Reedy as well. What a guy. Beautiful. Listen, last one for you. I told my kids that I was coming on to talk to you. And when we were together in Qatar, when we were doing some work for the Euros, your wife sent over a video of a snake going through your kitchen. And we were, because we come on, you've got a snake in your kitchen. Your poor wife's having to fend off us. So my kid said, ask him about the snake. Is that true? So,
yes, that is so true. So, you know, we've been here 10 years. I've only ever seen them on the golf course, really. Because the closer you are to the beach, the less you see, the more you go inland. You know, you can bet your bottom dollar that you're going to see one, mate. And it's a case of just giving it one of them in case they touch you. But that moment there, we used to have a cat, and I think the cat had brought this snake into the kitchen. And it's called what they call red bellies. So they've got this lovely red thing under their belly, and the rest of them is black. And they're not the most deadly ones. It's the brownies that are deadly. But how she managed that, mate? It was unbelievable. So she killed it with a metal bin. She put the bin on its head. There you go. But there's a lot worse things than that over here.
Listen, lovely talking to you. We'll stay in touch. And I really hope that, and I'll follow your career with great interest. I hope you get your break. And love to all. And thanks for talking to us, Mike. All the best, pal.
Man, Rob, wish you all the best, mate. Stay safe. And, you know, everybody's been through tough times. I appreciate you asking us to come on just to see you, because I remember I was just telling my wife before, she said, who are you chatting to? I said, Rob McCaff. She said, how do you know him? I said, he was the man that did my first ever television interview down at Teesside Tertiary College. You remember that?
Yeah. To know that's right. How old would you have been then?
Mate, I was 17.
Yeah, I remember, because I was.
There was you and the camera crew following me around the university or the college that we were at. And I felt like a superstar, mate. I felt like a movie star. But after you was left, everybody started just pelting things at us. And I think that was a big time gig.
Mick, lovely speaking to you, mate. Take care.
Take care. Stay safe, lad.
Cheers, mate.